Okay, go ahead, honey.
All right. Do you know who was president when you were born?
Yes. Oh, do I? Oh, you want that?
Yeah.
It was Roosevelt.
Okay. All right.
He might have. You know what? He might have died that year. Actually, he might have died that year, and Truman might have just taken over. I'm not sure what time of the year Roosevelt died that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harry Truman, the vice president, took over.
What year were you born?
47. April 28, 47. So you would have to see when Harry Truman's presidency started.
Okay, great. Keep going, Austin.
All right. Which college did you attend during this whole shebang?
What?
What college did you go to during this whole event?
I was at Drury College, D-R-U-R-Y, when I decided to get involved at the national level. I was going to Drury College in the spring of 68.
Why did you get political in the first place?
Why did I get political?
Yeah.
I guess I was always political, even in high school. High school politics, and then I was interested in national politics. I was a political science major at college. In fact, at the time I decided to get involved in national, I was in the process of forming my own student government to challenge the existing student government in the next round of elections. Right in the middle of that when I changed direction.
Okay. Were you about to say something?
No, let's see, so why did I change? I guess you're wondering, why did I change direction?
Yeah, why did you change direction? What happened?
Well, what was already going on was the Vietnam War. And about 20,000 young men were coming home in boxes during the Vietnam War, much different than today's war, when there is no draft now, and everybody's just horrified that 2,000 people have been killed or 3,000 people have been killed. But during the Vietnam War, during that period, 20,000 had already been killed, and there was a draft. And so there was already a lot of sentiment on campus against the Vietnam War, or on campuses, not so much the campus I was going to, but in the news, and so that had the political, that thing going the political air, but I decided to get really involved when Martin Luther King was shot, and the night he was shot, I was introducing my candidate for the student body presidency at a forum, and we got word that Martin Luther King had been shot, and the forum was going to be canceled for the rest of the evening, and I went over to my fraternity house, and there's some guys watching TV, and they were kind of, they were acting as if this was a good thing, and I was pretty devastated by it, and I don't really know how to explain that. I've never been I never thought of it, about it one way or another, about the racial situation in America, really, and but I left the house, took a long walk that night, and I don't know, I just decided to get involved nationally. Something was wrong, something was going wrong, and I just wanted to jump in. And maybe it's to some extent a bit because I completed what I was interested in at the campus level. It was obvious that most of the candidates I was running against the student body were going to win the election. So I guess I completed one thing, and I was ready to start something else. So Next day or so, I called the draft Rockefeller for president office in New York City. I was in Missouri, Springfield, Missouri, and I called and asked to speak to somebody in charge of the youth for Rockefeller. I was the kind of a young liberal Republican kid. And got hold of somebody on the phone and asked if I could get in contact with other people that were in states around me that were active in drafting Rockefeller, or even in my state. It turns out they didn't really have anybody called state chairman or anything like that, or college chairman or anything like that. And I decided to call Rockefeller. There was another number that was accessible. I think it was still a fundraising number through Rockefeller directly. I called that and finally got to talk to somebody there who was interested in what I was talking about, and he said, I'll see what I can find for you. Well, while I was waiting for him to get back to me, I decided to set up my own organization. So I started calling all of the universities at all of the states around me. I think I called 11 or 12 of them and asked to be connected. Did they have a phone number for the College Republican Club on campus? And I think every one of them had a number for that. And I had decided whoever answered, I would ask if they were going to be supporting Nixon or Rockefeller, and if they were going to be supporting Rockefeller, I was going to name them state chairman for college students for Rockefeller. You still there?
Hi.
Hello. I'm still here. Who's this?
This is Pamela in Ottawa.
Oh, hi, Pamela. Listen, you're just a little bit early, honey. It's at 6:15.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah,
for sure. Okay,
though. Look forward to it. Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
You still there? Austin?
Yeah, still there.
So on my own initiative, I called all of these campuses, and I appointed 11 or 12 state chairman of Youth for Rockefeller. And I was and appointed myself the Midwestern chairman. But that's all there was. There wasn't anything else. And then I called this guy back at the Rockefeller office, and I said, I heard your, I know what precipitated this. Rockefeller was in the paper was going to be coming to Iowa, which is right above Missouri, in about 2 weeks. And that's what got me going calling the Rockefeller thing. I saw that like a couple of days after he had been shot, and I decided, I was sitting in my room, and I decided to start making these calls and see if there was a way to meet Rockefeller there and so on. Well, I was just one person at that time, but now I was chairman of Midwestern Youth for Rockefeller with 12 state chairmen of Youth for Rockefeller. And so this guy was very interested. He says, well, can you come to Iowa? And I said, well, that's why I've been calling. I'd like to come to Iowa and bring my group together, and we'd like to meet the governor. He was the governor of New York at the time. And he said, great. And he called back and set it up. There was going to be a time and a day. And I headed up there in my car with one kid's overnight clothes. And I had called all these college kids back and told them Rockefeller was going to be in Iowa. And he wants to meet our Midwestern group, and can you come? And I think 9 out of the 12 showed up, some of them having to drive some distance, the state surrounding Missouri. Well, we all showed up there. What we didn't know was that Rockefeller had decided that he was going to announce for president in Iowa. He was just at that time being kind of aloof. You know, people were talking him to running. It was in the news that he might run, but he hadn't announced he was going to run yet. Well, they told me this the night I arrived. And they said, in the morning, there's going to be a press conference, and we would like you and your gang to be part of the press conference. And lo and behold, there we were. He announced, and for president. And after the meeting, his campaign manager came over and asked if I would be interested in getting involved in the campaign more directly. And I said, well, sure. He said, well, actually, what Governor Rockefeller would like you to do is fly back with us on his private plane to New York and start setting this thing up. I said, well, I'm going to college right now. And they said they would get a hold of my college and work it out so that I would continue getting credit, you know, whatever. So Lo and behold, with one change of clothes, within 3 hours, I was on the governor's plane flying to New York City. My parents just thought I'd driven up to Iowa. I was taking a weekend off college. And there I was. I was in New York, and they put me up in a hotel and gave me credit at the clothing store down in the lobby. And for the laundry, I could retweak in my clothing. I was living in a hotel. And they said the draft group, they were at odds with the group that was trying to draft Rockefeller. And they wanted any files they had on at all, plus, but most importantly, anything they had on you for Rockefeller, and wanted me to go over there and liberate the files. Well, I went over there, and I just talked to them and said, this is what I was doing. I'm just helping. And they actually gave me some phone numbers of some youth they had. And I went back, and Rockefeller, by then, had set up his own office, rented his own office space, his own phones, and that was like within 2 weeks he had done that. And I had a desk, and I was given the title of National Vice Chairman for Youth for Rockefeller because they were bringing in some nationally known young guy that had been active in the National Young Republican Party as a chairman. But I was going to be running the show. But, you know, nobody ever heard of me. So I was titled Vice Chairman of Youth for Rockefeller and for the Midwest. And then I had the Midwestern area as my specific area to start getting things coordinated for the national campaign. So that's how I really got involved. It was just a kind of initiative fluke. You know, I initiated it, but I had no idea it was going to go that big, that quick. And I got very involved in the Rockefeller campaign, traveled around the country a lot, and then flew around the country organizing and giving speeches a lot. And Nixon defeated Rockefeller, which everybody knew was going to happen at the convention in Miami. And then I called the Nixon people. I wasn't really very interested. I just didn't like the feeling of the guy at the time. But I called and said that I might be interested in continuing in the campaign. You know, would they be open to an interview? Yes, they would, definitely. Of course, I had all the files from the Youth for Rockefeller. It was all kept on card indexes then. There were no, there's no, it's hard to imagine this, Austin, but there were no computers. You know, there were no cell phones. Everything was on cards. There were hardly copy machines, really. But, so I had boxes of these cards with the names and addresses on them for the Rockefeller campaign. And, so I met the Nixon people at a restaurant in New York. They flew up, from D.C., from Washington, D.C., and, there was three of them, three guys, and it was, it was a pretty boring dinner. They didn't seem to have any differences of opinion, and I don't know, it was just kind of boring to me. And I thought about it and decided, you know what, I'm going to give the Democrats a shot. So I called the Humphrey Muskie. It was Senator Humphrey and Senator Muskie were also running for president. The Democrats had not yet selected had not held a convention yet. But it looked like Humphrey was going to win. So I called them, said what I had, said what I was interested in. They also sent up three people to New York. And this was two guys and a woman who had differences of opinion about major issues. And we all had a real round-robin conversation about it, and it was very interesting. And I said, well, I'd much rather be with these people for the next couple of months. You know, this would be a lot more interesting. So I told Humphrey and Humphrey's campaign manager that I would like to, you know, work with his campaign. So they immediately put me on the payroll and gave me a place to stay. But since he wasn't the official candidate yet, I didn't have much to do. So they decided to send me around the state to some different national student conventions that are held for college student body presidents and offices and organizations, and just look around for other leaders that might want to get involved. So I was in the process of doing that, and here came the 1968 Democratic Convention that was going to be held in Chicago in August. And they got me a room in a nice hotel right off the big park where the demonstrations ended up happening, and tickets into the convention. So I would be there when he announced, you know, and meet the other people who are going to be, really active in the campaign. There are a lot of new people being brought on board. So I was up in my room, and I was looking out the window, and the demonstrations were starting out in the park, and they were big, and they would go on late into the night. Thousands of kids. I've never seen anything like it in my life. You know, I was a pretty naive Midwestern kid, and I thought it looked a lot more interesting than sitting in my room, so I went outside, was warned not to go outside, that it was dangerous at the door. They had security at the doors of the hotels. So I went out in the park, met a bunch of people, young people. It was just a great experience. I just started learning a lot about the war, people's effect, who were affected by the war. Their brothers had been killed, their fathers had been killed. Why they were actually against the war, that the war really wasn't to fight communism. The war was to secure, a trading partner in that region that we would control, and then control, hopefully, they said, other trading partners in the region from that hole. We already had South Korea, but they wanted to hold on to Vietnam as well. I later learned also that the military really needed another place to put its weapons, and the military manufacturers, I should say, were really looking for another war so they could keep making weapons. You need to replace them. I need to have them bought to be replaced. So there were a lot of people pushing for a war, period, somewhere. So I learned all about that, and I stayed out all night, invited some of them up to my room to shower and clean up, had to get them through security. Ended up being one night out in it when tear gas was being thrown. It was the first time I'd ever been around tear gas. And some poor policeman, for some reason, had driven right down the main street between the hotels and the park, and they were rocking his car to tip it over. And I stepped out between the car and him. He was standing beside his car, and he was scared to death, this young police officer. And he'd gotten out of his car while they were rocking it. And stepped in between, and another guy followed me and stepped it with me, and we told everybody, calm down. And this guy got back in his car and just locked it, and then pretty soon the crowd left him alone and started dividing around it as they were walking up the street. And I looked back, and I never did see him locking it again. I was in the park then the next day, and they were trying to clear the park. And the way they decided to clear these thousands of people around, out of the park, instead of mostly circling it and giving them a way out to walk, they entirely circled it and then bullhorned in, you have to leave the park. You have to leave. Well, there's no way to leave. You had to go towards the police officers who were I'm going to say 500 of them were circled around the park, almost baton to baton. And so as you would try to go out, they would hit you. You had to crawl under the legs and go dive between them to get out. It was the only way out of the park, was to go through this gauntlet of police batons. This would easily have left a way out and directed them down some path to some other place, or split them off, or divide it in half, but they chose this way to do it. And ended up arresting a lot of kids. Anybody who got beat down enough to where they could be picked up and carried over to the paddy wagon, that's what happened. I drove down and got out of there. Got pretty crazy after that. A lot of the kids went down the street, busting up windows and stuff. I did not. I went back to my room. But I eventually made it to convention, and it was a great convention. Humphrey did get nominated, and we went on to lose again to Nixon, in the election. Oh, I should say that during the spring after Martin Luther King was killed, something that did affect me and that caused me to think it wouldn't be so bad working for Humphrey, Muskie, the Democrats, if Rockefeller lost, was that Robert F. Kennedy was killed in June, and just before the Republican convention. I was in Tulsa giving speeches and organizing in Tulsa for Rockefeller, and that had a real strong effect on me, too, just like the death of King did. And again, I don't know why. I was never a big Kennedy fan or Democrat fan, but for some reason that had a real effect on how I felt about things. It just seemed awfully wrong, and it was just a reminder of the King death that there's something going on here. There's something wrong about what's going on, that these people are being assassinated. It just didn't seem right, so that was in the back of my mind too when I did contact the Humphrey people and decided to go with them. But Anyway, Humphrey lost, and I decided to be an anti-war activist and started traveling around the country with people that I had known and I still had the phone numbers with from both campaigns, national student leaders, and we started trying to close down campuses across the country. They were mostly all against the war, but we soon found that the anti-war movement wasn't as popular on some campuses as the anti-racist movement. There was a big movement towards having classes to teach black studies on campuses all over the country, and that was already much stronger than some of the anti-war movements on some campuses. And so we would join into that and try to facilitate, try to cause the administration of the college to overreact somehow. If you can get the administration to overreact, then it affects students who weren't even involved in the issue. And that was always the goal, to do that. And we were successful at that. And we would, I remember one campus, we took over the college radio station and were announcing and had the doors barricaded. I think that was in Madison, Wisconsin. And had the doors barricaded and were, you know, giving our talk about against the war over the airwaves of the radio station until they convinced us to come out. But we didn't went from campus to campus. We decided to close down San Francisco State College, which was way west out in San Francisco, way west for a lot of us. And I got the money together, and I got out there, met some others, and we started trying to figure it out. And they had a huge pro-black studies program going on. We joined in, hired chancellor, did overreact. The close down campus was successful. The anti-war movement was very visible in the media. We got a lot of coverage from that. Meanwhile, I decided I would stay in Berkeley. Well, in fact, I was staying in Berkeley while we were trying to close San Francisco State down across the water over in San Francisco. And I started writing for a paper called the Berkeley Barb. I wanted to just keep going with Berkeley, maybe even enroll in classes there to finish college. And but my buddy said, no, we're going to close this one down too. I said, no, guys, I'm just never going to finish college. And so we got active there on the Berkeley campus at UC Berkeley. And that took a little while, a lot of what I call sidewalk guerrilla theater. You go through some guerrilla theater acting like you're soldiers and people dying, and you attract a crowd, and you give your pitch and your speech. And we were starting to get some enthusiasm and some support, but not enough, really. And lo and behold, the governor then was Governor Ronald Reagan, who was going to eventually be president. He provided what we were looking for. The administration wouldn't overreact, but Reagan decided to have helicopters come in and drop tear gas on us where we were demonstrating in a big lawn area at campus. As luck would have it for us, the wind was blowing right into the classrooms on one side, and then it was going on into other buildings on the other side. And so people who didn't care a bit about the Black Studies movement or the anti-war movement were all affected by this tear gas spreading all over campus, being dropped from the Reagan helicopters. So a lot of them just joined right into the demonstration then. Right then. They had to clear the buildings. They all cleared the building. A lot of them just jumped right into the demonstration, going on right out in the lawn. And that helped quite a bit, starting the closing down of the campus. And within that same week, we had also been looking at this little park right next to campus that the campus owned and was planning on doing some construction of new buildings on. And but the people of Berkeley used it just as a neighborhood park. And so there was a conflict with its existing use as a public park and what the campus was going to use it for development. They never thought about having to protect it. You know, they just thought, well, we own it. But so they threw up a fence around it. No. So we decided, since it's becoming a big contest, we bought a bunch of children's equipment, like a swing set, stuff like that, and we put it in the park. Well, right after that, a couple of days, they threw up a chain-link fence all around the park, and nobody could get in. And a great photograph of the children's playground equipment looking through a chain link fence. That was just, it couldn't have been better. You know, it just looked great. And that became it was called People's Park, and it became a great, great issue for us. And it just continued to just gel everybody together, being against the war, against the administration, against the government. It was just another sign that they were just out of touch, you know, with the community. And I was finally tired of the tear gas, and I called back to Democratic headquarters and people I'd met there and said, I'd like to come in out of the tear gas for a while. You got anything for me? And they said, why don't you come on in and you can be national chairman, college chairman for Democratic Party. And I said, man, I'd love that. And so I flew back, and they got me a place to stay, and I moved into the Watergate building where the Democratic headquarters was. Now, this was before Nixon had, you know, burglarized it. I moved in there and had an office and put out a news, you know, national newsletter, and, you know, went to some campuses, you know, for a while. And then I got bored with it and eventually called my dad and went back to work for him in Missouri. I was just done with politics in general, politicians. I was just done with the whole thing. I couldn't believe Nixon was president, elected president. And, you know, I was just going to get out. I figured I'd had as much effect as I could have on the outcome of things. And so I retired. And that's how I spent 1968, 70, and 71.
That's fantastic. We only have about minutes left. Austin, do you have a final question?
Yes. Today, what do you gain from this whole experience that happened back then?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've been thinking about that a lot lately, Austin. What I gained was the fact that it's not that everybody votes that makes a difference. It's how many people you affect voting, for one thing. Even if you don't vote, if you get 10 other people to vote a certain way, that can have a big effect. But also, just a personal activity towards something you believe is essential to maintain a free democracy. There has to be truthfulness in the media, and there has to be truthfulness between people and the information you're sharing, so that you really know actually what's going on. And I really believed that then, and our group believed that then, that it was really important to always know what was really going on, up to the minute, kind of. And now lately, the last year and a half or so, I've watched the media change its tune. In the old days, it's hard to believe, but newsmen on the media, they were actually thought they were trying to report the real news as it was actually happening. Now, the news stations are owned by very wealthy men and corporations that actually own them as businesses, and a lot of the major news outlets, national TV news, they tell you what is the opinion of the person or corporation that owns the news station. Mm-hmm. Even one that I agree with, I know for a fact that they're just saying, they're telling what, you know, and I think they're telling closer to the truth, but even they have an opinion, and so news with opinion now. So I am very concerned about the ability to get truth now for all of us as citizens in a democracy. And so I've been thinking about, and I asked my wife lately, what if we decide to get active about something? And she said, all right. But I haven't decided how best I might affect what I see as negative about the country. But I guess what I learned from all those experiences is that you can have an effect. You can, and you need to. A person who feels strongly needs to step in and do what they can. It's essential for democracy to work.
What do you think about the Occupy movement?
I thought it was good. I wish that there had been a group that led it and gave it a more direct, a more singular direction to keep it organized and keep it moving, but there wasn't. I mean, that's the same way that the anti-war movement could have gone, but it developed a leadership and a purpose. The Occupy movement became too, there were 50 different reasons, I mean, it's just, they didn't center it enough on a focus that could last very long. But I thought it was an expression of frustration and about not being told the truth, about the government seeming to not listen at all for what's going on, with the economy after the Republican administration allowed, basically the economy to just be robbed. I mean, they just let it be robbed. And they could see that might be happening again, and that the people who did the robbing weren't even being punished. Nobody was being punished. Nobody was being brought to trial, and yet millions, maybe even billions of dollars were stolen from our economy, from the banks and from businesses and pension funds, and all the money was stolen because it had been wrongly invested and by people who they were. Initially, it was anti-Wall Street, and if they kept that focus, I think that would have been good. But the fact that nobody's been punished for it, and it looked like that same group was going to try to get the presidency again, I thought it was a good movement to get started and get, and it did for a while. It actually created this phrase: "Are you a member of the 1% or the 99%?" That's the best thing that came out of that whole movement. And the 99% motto really got picked up, and it still exists, and singled out the 1%, and the fact that they're mostly Romney supporters and mostly supporters of the military manufacturers, and that's just not weapons, it's included whether it's clothing or boots or whatever is being sold. It's our largest, I believe it's our largest manufacturing sector in America. We do sell more weapons than any other country in the world. Obama even knew when he's coming in. We always have to have some wars going on because we've got the largest percentage of our population for any manufacturing sector depends on wars going on somewhere. Even if we're not directly involved, we've got to be selling them boots, guns, weapons, food supplies, whatever. We've got to be selling the armies at. And just to keep our own economy going. So even he knew that going in, that you can